I don't even know how to get into this sermon now, you know? It's like, wow, where do you go from there? So let's turn to Romans chapter 5, verses 6 through 8 as we continue a series on discovering God, looking at the attributes of our God. And we do this in preparation to gather around the Lord's Supper today. So let's take a look at Romans chapter 5. We're going to read verses 6 through 8. For while we were still weak, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. Indeed, rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person someone might actually dare to die. But God proves His love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. So today we're going to talk about the fact that God is love. God is love. This is the characteristics of God that we're going to be exploring today. And the fact that God is love has been embraced by, means that we've been embraced by a personal God. And that that we're able to live under His care, under His protective custody, now and forevermore. And so if I were to ask how many of you believe this, probably all of us would raise our hands. And yet there's a huge difference between affirming a statement like God is love with our minds and teaching our hearts how to live out that statement. The motion that most impedes our experience of the love that God has poured out for us is not hate, but fear. Fear is the thing that gets in our way. And this is a problem because the Bible talks about fearing God. It talks about it a lot. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, the psalmist tells us. So we're kind of left with this tension, you know, that fearing God is a good thing, but yet it gets in the way of our experiencing, fully experiencing the love of God. So let me take a moment just to unpack this a bit. The basis of all ancient Near Eastern religion was the fear of gods. You lived in fear of the gods. It was wise to be afraid of the gods because they had the ability to really mess you up. And they did it quite regularly. And so because of this, you brought them gifts. You didn't bring gifts to them because you liked them or you loved them or anything like that. You brought gifts to them because you were afraid of what they could do to you. And so you brought them gifts so that they wouldn't be angry with you and perhaps to look down on you with some favor. But love had nothing to do with it. It was all about fear and appeasement, fear and punishment. And that's reflected in the most ancient of Israelite literature. They too feared Yahweh because He was capable of great and horrible things. I mean, raining fire and brimstone down from heaven and turning people into pillars of salt and opening up a gap in the earth so that it swallows up people and all these other things, turning the Nile into blood, killing your firstborn. So the message is very clear. Be afraid. Be very, very afraid. Don't mess up because God will get you. And eventually, fear of God became shorthand for the worship of God. Worship always involved being afraid. But as you read through the Old Testament, you begin to see a move away from fear-based religion as love began to be introduced. And at first, it's a tentative mixture of the two, love and fear that God, who is both able to give and take away your life. But as we get closer and closer to the time of Jesus, we hear the voices of love a little bit more clearly. Fearing God becomes less and less about being afraid of God and more about worshiping a God who loves you. And when you get to the New Testament, you begin to hear something that you didn't hear very much in the Old Testament. Fear not. Don't be afraid. You start to hear that more and more. People starting to be invited to approach the throne of God, not with fear and trepidation, but with boldness. It was in the very first hymn that we sang today. I noted that. we approach his bold with his throne with boldness. You didn't do that with a normal God if you were afraid of him. Not with boldness. You went in tentatively, you know? It's like, okay, what kind of mood is he in today? Right? But now we're invited to approach the throne without fear. Not that God isn't powerful, but because he loves you, you're able to approach him. And he uses that power to protect you, to nurture you, to work for your good, to enhance your life, to give that life to you in abundance. Fear not. Now, the phrase fear God or the fear of the Lord still makes some appearances in the New Testament, but it's taken on a different flavor. It means to worship God still. It becomes still shorthand for worshiping God, but without the element of being afraid involved in it. Even though it still says fear of the Lord, that element of fear, you know, it's like when you still say today, right, roll down your window. And when I tell most of you to roll down your window, what do? You push a button. Isn't that right? There's no rolling involved rolling down your window, but we still say that, right? Now, most of us are old enough to remember that, you know, that it literally meant at one time rolling down your window, but now to most young people, my kids have no idea what rolling down your window, but still I say it. Roll down your window, and they push a button to get it down. In the same way that rolling down your window no longer involves any rolling, so also in the New Testament, the fear of the Lord no longer involves any actual fear. It's referring to worshiping the Lord. But not everyone recognizes this. And they still try to use fear to get us to love God. And I know that this narrative that runs through our spirits is often in the form of a fear that negates God's love for us. Some of us were raised in homes where God was used to keep us in line. God's going to get you if you misbehave. And fear was used as a tool for discipline. It lodges in our spirits and it's projected onto God. So God becomes like the dark side of Santa Claus, you know. He's watching to see who's naughty and nice. He sees you when you're sleeping. Is that the kind of God who lurks in your narrative? And some of us were raised in environments where the ones we expected to protect us were either not there when we needed them to be, or even worse, they actually abused us emotionally and physically and maybe even sexually. We may have felt unsafe throughout our lives and have a difficult believing in the center of our being that God not only has our best interests at heart, but he can and actually will make those best interests happen. And others of us are carrying a bag full of guilt and shame because we have done things that have violated and betrayed the standards that we thought we held dear. And underneath all of that guilt and that shame is a fear of punishment. Adam and Eve hid in the garden because they were afraid. Fear is the greatest impediment to the love of God. 1 John says that perfect love, complete love, casts out all fear. So how can we come to experience the inviting love of God that provides us the safest place in the world to be? I want to zero in on one verse that takes us to the center of it. In verse 8, Romans 5:8, God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. If we can move to the reality of this verse from our heads to our hearts, we'll be living out the greatest truth that there is, that God is for us. He's for you. If we look at this verse, a phrase at a time, we can draw some inferences. But God, it says. But God. These are kind of the gospel in a nutshell, right? But God contains the entirety of the good news. When we are expecting God to lower the boom on deserving sinners, God interrupts with His grace. But God demonstrates His love for us. And where do we see His love most demonstrated and put on public display? Christ died for us. Those simple words. Christ died for us. God demonstrates His own love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. John's message is the same over in 1 John 4, 9 and 10. He says, this is how God showed His love to us. Not that we loved God, but that He loved us and sent His Son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Maybe some of you have heard of the author, Brennan Manning. Wrote a wonderful book that you ought to get. It's called The Ragamuffin Gospel. And great book on grace. But he tells a moving story that I think illustrates the cross as an expression of God's love. It was 1989, and he was on the speaking circuit, and he had just completed a weekend speaking engagement where he had wowed the crowds, but he felt empty. He felt empty compared to the kind of life that he was commending to his hearers. So he decided that he needed to go have a visit with his adopted mother. Now, she didn't adopt him. He adopted her. Brennan Manning was born and raised by loving parents who named him Richard Manning. Richard Manning was his name. And he was a Marine, and he served in the Korean War, and he and his best friend, his best friend Ray Brennan, signed up for the Marines together, and one night they were in a foxhole together in Korea. They were waiting orders, and they were casually just sitting there in the foxhole eating chocolate bars when a hand grenade landed in their foxhole right next to Ray. And Manning recalls that his friend casually tossed aside the candy wrapper, and he jumped on the grenade. And he looked up and he winked lovingly at his best friend before the grenade exploded under him. And 8 years later, when Richard Manning entered the Franciscan priesthood, he adopted a new name, as was the custom at ordination. Because of the sacrifice of his best friend, he took on the name Brennan as his first name. And thus he became to the world Brennan Manning. So back to 1989, he's feeling kind of despairing after the speaking engagement. So he goes to see Ray's mom, Mrs. Brennan. And they're reminiscing after dinner about the crazy things that Ray and Manning had done together. But Manning couldn't escape his depression. And so he asked his adopted mom, "Hey, Ma, do you think that Ray loved me?" And her first reaction was to laugh. She thought he must be joking. "Richie, you're such a kidder," she said. "Say the craziest things." And Manning said, I'm serious." And then he saw anger in her eyes, and she said to him, "Don't you ever talk to me like that again. Don't you ever talk about my Raymond like that. Stop making fun of me." And then she exploded, "What more could he have done for you? What more could he have done?" And then she calmed down as she understood what he was going through. She said, "It's all right, Richie. We all need a little reassurance now and then." And we do, don't we? We all need a little reassurance now and then of God's love for us. "Greater love has no one than this," Jesus said, "that he laid down his life for his friends." What more could he have done for you and me? So Paul ratchets up the cost all the more. God demonstrates his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Paul says it's one thing to die for a friend. Maybe you might do that. Somebody might die for a good person. Maybe. But no one dies for their enemies. But while we were in a state of sin, Christ died for us. When we cared not a whit that there was God in heaven and that He had decided to give His life for us, while we were still in full rebellion against the authority of God and asserting our independence from Him, that's when God demonstrated His love for us. Look at it this way. God knew everything there was to know about you and me. All the good and also all the bad. He knew all the light and He knew all the darkness. He knew ahead of time the callousness that can exist in our hearts. He knew our capacity for selfishness. He knew that we were capable of doing the unthinkable. And He saw all of those things that we think about other people in our minds. He saw them all. In other words, there is never anything we're going to discover about ourselves that God hasn't always known. There's nothing we're going to come across as we uncover our inner darkness about which God will say, you know, wow, I didn't realize that. If I'd known that, I wouldn't have died for you. No, while we were sinners, Christ died for us. So if you want to know who God is, if you want to know what God is like, all you need to do is look at the cross. And there you will find a God who is not angry at us and looking to punish someone, anyone, even if it's his own innocent son. But rather you'll find a God who loves us so much that He willingly and lovingly gives His life in order to break the power of sin in our lives and to redeem us to a life lived forever in His loving presence. And that is what we remember and we proclaim as we share this meal with one another.